Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose. Don't know what that was, but this is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you on podcast radio worldwide. And I want to welcome some of the new countries that are listening, Switzerland, Ireland, Norway, and so forth. Thank you so much for joining us every Wednesday. Really do appreciate your and value your listenership, along with the Americans, of course, and other countries. So, wow, we have a really hot topic for you today. And it's a topic that is serious and affects millions of people. And it's pervasive around the world. It's a topic that people don't want to talk about because it's disturbing. And the average person probably cannot comprehend the evil of strangers or family members or neighbors or people call themselves friends who actually harm children and young females and abuse them. Unfortunately, America is divided about the thousands of children that are being trafficked into the United States of America, which is illegal, but it's happening. And the country is divided about what to do with the children because people are upset about them being locked up in detention centers. The truth is that with an influx of tens of thousands of little children coming across the borders without parents, possibly kidnapped by cartels for trafficking, we don't know how many are actually raped or tortured or abused or killed along the way, because we can't even locate 10,000 missing children that have crossed over our borders without guardians or parents. So they have to place them somewhere, kidnapped or used as sex slaves or being taken away by fake parents, people who claim they are the parents, because most of these kids are unidentified. So this is a really serious problem for America and for the children, of course. And the only thing that the government can do, which they are doing, is keeping them in facilities where they can't leave so that they are accountable for them. And, of course, Americans feed and house and clothe children. I mean, that's just what we do. And now we have to figure out what we're going to do with tens of thousands of children who are non-citizens of the USA, without them being harmed and being placed with the wrong people. So it's a really serious problem. It's deeper than everybody's screaming about. These things have to be thought out because no one expected tens of thousands of foreign parents to send their children into the USA without a guardian or without ID or without parents and or sell them to cartel members, the USA. And there is a lawsuit that has been filed against the federal government by a law firm that I happen to know about. It was filed probably a year ago, before President Trump was in office. And I'm going to have to check on it and see what happened, because they were concerned about at least 10,000 foreign children who walked across the borders or were brought across the border, trafficked, smuggled, whatever, have gone missing. And they don't know where these children happen to be. So this is more serious than people realize about the government, screaming at the government on how to keep these kids from leaving the facility in order to protect them. There's a lot of danger out there, and there's a lot of bad people, cartels, radicals, terrorists, gang members, criminals, and so forth, who prey on women and children. And this is becoming a huge problem, not just in third world countries any longer with the open borders, but right here in our own backyard. There are a couple of states that have a very serious problem of young females being trafficked, but you're not hearing about it, kidnapped and trafficked. And the numbers aren't decreasing. The numbers are increasing. So we have to address this problem right on its face and not sweep it away. The parents who are allowing their children to leave their custody in foreign nations are risking their own children's lives. And that is very disturbing to me, that Americans are getting blamed, but we're not the ones sending our children into foreign nations to cross over their borders and not care about what's happening to them. So we really need to take a serious look at all of these issues and try to figure out what on earth we're going to do, because it's a drain on our economy, and for one thing, and we have to hire more manpower to take care of the children. And this is all on the backs of the taxpayers. And so then we have to worry about the entitlement programs, because we'll need entitlement programs and more funding to feed them, to house them, and for health care and clothing and so forth. So we can't just blame America and the current regime or the past one. We have to also look at these foreign third world nations who are allowing their children or else. Their governments aren't addressing the criminals, the cartels, the gang members who are kidnapping the children or paying the parents for the children to traffic them. There's a lot of issues going on here, and we need to address each of them, and hopefully the government will set up committees of qualified people to address these issues. And you know, that's what we need to do, no matter what. We need to make sure that those children are either returned to their rightful parents, they are identified, and that they don't get kidnapped or wander away, like the 10,000 children that have gone missing, and now we have the lawsuit pending. So on that note, we're going to come back, and we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And we're going to take a little break, so don't touch that dial, because we'll be back in just a moment.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up. You're listening to The Rose on Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. That's on the west coast of the good old USA. Check your state and your country and check the time, bookmark, and share, and follow Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday. When we have very prominent guests from around the nation who are experts and authors. And now we are going to enter into the world of experts and authors. And today we have a really dynamic guest, and she's the author of I Am the Product of Rape, a memoir. And her name is Catherine Wyatt Morley. And she wrote a really serious book. It's a shocking story that traces the repeated patterns of rape and incest that plagued four generations of her family, including her birth, and her mother and her stepfather. So we're going to talk to her about that and how she became an activist and how she achieved overcoming her issues and then helping women around the nation, maybe even around the world. So let's say hello to Catherine Wyatt Morley and welcome her to Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Catherine.
How are you?
I'm fine. It's a pleasure to have you today on our show. And I know it's a really serious topic. And so a lot of people will be listening intently because we have a problem, of course, with sexual harassment, as everybody knows, and allegations of rape across the country for decades. And No one hardly talks about incest, and because for many reasons, of course. So, Catherine, I wanted to ask you to tell us and tell our audience where you were born and about your mom and her age and who sexually abused you.
Well, I was born in Michigan. I was born in Flint. And I was born to a 12-year-old who was molested by her stepfather. So, hence, that makes me the product of incest and rape, hence the name of the book. And it was a horrific, I was adopted, and so I grew up in an adoptive home. And so it wasn't until I was well into adulthood that I met my biological mother and the family and learned the truth, because over the course of time, I had, of course, sought my adoption file and went through the process of getting my adoption file open, but come to find out what was in my adoption file did not necessarily ring true after I met, after I grew up, of course, and met my biological mother, who then told me the truth, that she was 12 years old when she gave birth to me. And, of course, you know, as a 12-year-old, she had no rights, or, you know, she didn't know actually what was even happening to her, of course, back then. And so it was a very traumatic situation for her to endure, and it was a whole thing that culminated in so many secrets and lies, which is one of the interweaving things that readers will find throughout the book. It's just, you know, just secrets and lies and cover-ups of those secrets and cover-ups of those lies. But I mean, a child of 12 giving birth, you can only imagine how horrific that had to be back then.
Anytime, I mean, seriously, especially when you're raped. And,
yes. Consistently,
And an innocent little child, you know, you're a child at 12. And you said you were born in a filthy basement to your 12-year-old mom, so apparently she didn't have anywhere to go as well.
Exactly. She did. She had no idea of even when she went into labor, she had no idea what was even happening to her body. You know, kids were, you know, girls and boys, they were so different back, you know, all those so many years ago. And you know, the way we think of, you know, as open as America is today, we were not that way back then. And so she had no idea what was happening to her. And unfortunately, the incest for her began at the raw age of 7. And it culminated, it's just horrific to even give it any thought. But it culminated into my birth at age 12. So, you know, when you think of a child at 7 whose body isn't even completely developed, and then at 12 to give birth in a filthy basement alone, not knowing what was happening to her, it was just absolutely horrific. Absolutely horrific.
And also back then, Catherine, not only did people not talk about incest or sex, basically didn't talk about sex, and then definitely
not.
Didn't talk about it to little children or even teenagers. And so you were just supposed to wait till you got married and that was it.
Exactly.
Because it was, you know, shameful and embarrassment to the family name and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So did your mom have, was she living with her parents? Where was she staying?
Yes, she was living with her parents. And unfortunately, and this is another horrific twist in the book, and is that her mother knew. She was living with her mother and stepfather. And her mother knew what was happening. Eventually, she discovered what was happening to her daughter, and she turned a blind eye, allowed it to continue. And of course, in August, she gave birth. And when she had given birth to me, her parents were in another city trying to find a place to put their pregnant 12-year-old daughter, because, of course, this is a disgrace. Of course, no one is supposed to know. And as you said, you know, shame and all of those things. So they were trying to figure out where they could put her before I was born, but they didn't know that by the time they got home that very day, she had given birth to me in the family home's basement. And when they got home, my mother, 12, and I the ambulance had already been called, and we were at the hospital. And I never laid eyes on my mother or again.
So what about your grandparents? You never had seen them again either?
Absolutely not. It was, you know, I was taken to the hospital, and that was it.
Wow.
None of them wanted
that was probably very common back then, because
yeah.
From what I've heard, they took the girl to the hospital, and then they took the baby away and adopted the baby out. And that
right.
was that.
And that was that. That's exactly what happened. There was no look back. There was no thought. There was no anything. It was, you know, they took her home. That was it. That was that. And end of discussion. It was never to be talked about again. That was it. That was just it.
So did your mom, how did your mom overcome that as she was growing up, and did she marry again? I mean, did she marry, period?
Yes, of course. she did marry. She, you know, she grew up, and she married and had two other children after giving birth to me, and no one in the family, my half-sisters, no one in the family knew that I existed, except for my mother at 12 years old was the oldest of 10 children. And when she was pregnant with me, her mother, my grandmother, was pregnant also. So there was a lot going on. And so she grew up and married and had two children, two girls, and none of them knew anything about me until I found my biological mother. And when I found her, one of the first, well, the first thing that she did was to tell her other children, by the way, you guys need to know that this is a part of my past that has come knocking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, that's how my two sisters found out that I even existed. But of course, yes, absolutely. I mean, immediately.
Oh.
And, you know, just wonderful young ladies, they realized that, you know, it wasn't my fault. I mean, you know, it wasn't their fault. And it wasn't even their mother's fault. There was no fault, you know, to be placed. They have been extremely accepting. But my mother's older siblings at the time of my birth remembered, and they have had a difficult time dealing with the fact that, I had found my biological mother.
Wow. And what? Oh, my gosh. And so when you met your mom, she's only 12 years older than you. How did that feel?
It weird, I guess. It's a great
I mean, it would be like an older sister, you know.
yeah. It really felt weird because when I met her, you know, I was still convinced that the information from the adoption papers, though we had, you know, spoken, you know, many, many times on the phone, you know, we eased into a relationship. We didn't just, you know, okay, you have two or three phone conversations and you know every single thing. So there was still a lot within the adoption files and adoption papers and all of those things that I was still clinging to. You know, so when we first met, it was weird, you know, to finally lay eyes on the person that actually gave birth to me. But it was something that was important to me. And as a mother myself, I felt that it was important, you know, as far as my lineage and my heritage and something that, you know, I felt that my children and my grandchildren would deserve to know. So it was a very interesting first meeting.
I would think so, because people would think, oh, you know, you're going to bond right away, but it's like a stranger, right?
It is like a stranger, and no, we did not bond right away. You know, all relationships take time, and the reality is, you know, of course, you know, we've had those, you know, initial, you know, 3-4 conversations over time, and then you decide to meet, and so we did, and you know, the initial hug, and you know, all of those things, and you know, you just kind of want to touch that person just to make sure that that person is real. So there was a lot of touching, you know, just to kind of, you know, like, wow, okay. So not only now am I putting a physical body to the voice that, you know, these several conversations that we've had over the phone since we actually met, but now I'm putting a body to that, I'm putting a face to that. And one of the things that I found so strange is that, and I don't know how others who, you know, meet their biological parents for the first time, but I was trying to find myself in her when I first met her. I was trying to find, you know, do I look like her? What part of me is like her? What, you know, you just kind of want to link yourself to that person. And so I found myself trying to find me in her.
And did you?
No, I did not.
Oh.
Yeah, no. No, which made it a little more difficult because I really was, you know, what about, you know, do I have her nose? Do I have her, you know, what? And that was difficult for me because by then by then I had had, you know, a little taste of the history about how I was created. So if I didn't look like her, then one would assume, ew, you know?
Yeah.
You got to look like somebody. Yeah.
Did your stepfather, it was her stepfather. Did he pass away or is he still around?
He had been deceased. For many, many years before I met her. I had pictures, you know, eventually, of course, you know, she showed me pictures and, you know, I met his children. And it's so weird because, of course, you know, the children that he had with my grandmother, my mother's mother, are my sisters and brothers / uncles and aunts. And I found that really to be a twisted scenario, sisters and brothers that are actually uncles and aunts.
Yes, uncles and aunts, and one of them's only like 12 years older than you, right? Just like your mom, and because your grandmother was pregnant at the same time. That is very, very confusing to anyone, I would assume. Confusing, and, you know, to try and comprehend all of that. Oh my goodness. We're talking to Catherine Wyatt Morley, and she wrote the devastating book, I Am the Product of Rape, a Memoir. And she wrote it with, is it Jillian Welsh Cole?
Jillian Welsh Cole, yes.
Okay, Jillian Welsh Coach. And she's your daughter, right?
She is, yes. Yes, Jillian is my daughter. And she wrote the epilogue.
And she also says that she was also by her eldest brother, and she wrote the epilogue, I Am the Product of Rape, a Memoir, and an essay she called Burning House. So
yeah.
I'm going to take a little break and grab a glass of water or juice or whatever and catch your breath. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about your daughter and her experience and her writings as well. Okay?
Mm-hmm. All right.
We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, hang on, because we're going to come back to the world of authors and experts. And we're going to hear more about Catherine's daughter and find out what happened to her and also about her writing and what her essay, and about her essay that's called Burning House. I like that title and I'm intrigued by it. So let's take the break. And you're listening to Columbo Chronicles Live right here at Worldwide Online Podcast.
Listening is an art, and art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, we are live every Wednesday, and you're listening to The Rose, and we are now in the middle of authors and experts with our very special guest, who has a very excellent book on her life's true experiences with rape and incest and how it became generational. And her name is Catherine Wyatt Morley, E-Y, if you want to look her up on the internet. And her daughter's name is Jaylion Welsh Cole. And she also has a legacy, and she wrote an epilogue in I Am the Product of Rape, a memoir, and an essay, and it's entitled Burning House. And so I wanted to ask Catherine more about what happened to her daughter and in this generational situation. So let's say hello to Catherine. Hello, Catherine.
Hello.
Okay, we're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we were going to talk about your daughter, Jaylion Welsh Cole, who also co-authored with you I'm the Product of Rape, a memoir, which they can look up and Google online. And she wrote an essay called Burning House. Tell us a little bit about her story and why she wrote these articles.
Well, it took me many years to come to grips with all of the information that was happening to me and with me, and through the writing of I Am the Product of Rape, a memoir. And so my daughter saw, she saw me writing, and I was telling her that this is something that is critical. And it had a lot to do, of course, with the current work that my daughter and I are doing. And so over the course of time, she came into my office and blurted out the fact that she had been molested by her brother, my son. My biological first child, her brother, and that was just absolutely horrific and devastating to me. But it really put a whole a bunch of puzzle pieces together that over the years were just jagged, and I couldn't understand why my son would behave in certain ways, and certain things I just were puzzling to me, could not understand. But when she said that to me, it's like everything in my spirit clicked, and it all became full circle for me. And without question, I believed every word that came from my daughter's mouth at that point. And because I was writing, she wanted to chronicle her journey and what it was like, what it has been like. And so she really drills into the gory details of the mental health aspects, which is, again, another topic that really goes unaddressed when you talk about trauma as it relates to incest and as trauma relates to rape. and molestation. Her piece, Burning House, really talks about the mental health aspects of it and how she was diagnosed bipolar and dealing with the trauma of what had happened to her over those years. And so her piece literally gives the full scope of the entire book, and it is placed intentionally at the back of the book to really portray her as the fourth generation of incest, that incest has actually touched in my family. And with her and I together, we have decided that incest stops now. It stops with us. And one of the ways that we are calling it what it is, we're calling incest incest, not domestic violence. It is incest. This is incest. And we're calling it what it is. We're putting a face to it, and it is very important that she and I break that cycle, not only within our own family. Of course, we have to, you know, make sure that, that our own family is secure, but we really want to work with others, which is so extremely important to my daughter, others that are dealing with similar situations, for them to know that they're not alone. And so it is a very important issue. It is an issue that is very real and personal to her and to me, and one that we continuously address head on.
And that is exactly what people need to hear, because people do feel isolated and alone, and it is a very serious problem because it's all over the news. And just, you know, I used to lead marches and protests and, you know, against the judges. There are some judges who would take children away from the non-offending parent, the mother, and give them to the accused pedophile. And that still goes on today with some judges. And so it's still an issue. So I'm really excited about your book because, you know, it is, it's happening and nobody's really talking about it or don't want to address it because it's not fun.
Right.
And so, you know, and so they want to be entertained. It's not entertaining. It's serious and it can happen to anybody, and it is happening.
Yeah.
And people do feel isolated and alone. And so I get it. I really get it. And so you are the founder and the chief executive officer and heartbeat of Women on Maintaining Education and Nutrition, and that is a nonprofit organization. Can you tell us a little bit about your organization?
Yes, I'd be very, very happy to. Women was founded going on 25 years ago when I was first diagnosed HIV positive. And in my community in Middle Tennessee, there were no services that addressed me as a African American heterosexual woman living with HIV. And so I called the local health departments and places like that. And in the area where I lived, where myself, my husband, and my three children at the time lived, they told me HIV doesn't live here. And I informed them, yeah, it does. And so the organization started off as a very small support group in my home, volunteer ran in my home, and we started getting women through word of mouth. We started having women from Alabama, far away as Alabama, and north as far away as Paducah, Kentucky, come to support group. And so the organization has grown, of course, in its service delivery over the years. And today we partner with the Office of Violence Against Women and several other entities to provide domestic violence, human trafficking, sexual assault, in addition to our cornerstone HIV/AIDS services. So we've been around for going on a quarter century doing tremendous work targeting women in the Middle Tennessee area.
Excellent. So also, you appeared in countless media outlets nationwide, and
mm-hmm.
you've appeared in South Magazine, Today Show, A&U Magazine, Pause, CNN, Voices of America, MSNBC, Talk America Radio, and many other radio stations, television shows. And you also are proactive in on these issues, apparently. So that leads me to Jay Lyon. I have to remember how to pronounce that.
Jalion, yeah.
First time I heard it, Jalion.
Well, yeah, Jalion. Yeah.
And she's the director of Women on Maintaining Education and Nutrition as well. And she began, you said, writing at a very early age with short stories and poems. So that probably helped her and inspired her to help you with co-author the book. And
yeah.
also, as a teen, she was inspired to draw. And you say that was a comfort for her and as she was creative in art. And
it was comfort for her, yeah.
Yeah.
Still to this
so,
day, her art is comforting.
Yes. Yeah, so when you talk to these women, do you try to pull out some of their talents as well? Because I know that sometimes if you draw or you write or you have a sport activity that you are pretty good at or you enjoy, that sometimes that energy that you use positively can help draw out some of that negativity that's built up inside. So is that part of your educational program?
It is. It is a very important part of our educational platform. We provide holistic approaches to care. That is literally the backbone of the organization. And taking care of one's self holistically, meaning the mind, the body, and the spirit, not just you need this specific service, and so we provide this specific service. We're not like that at all. We care about the entire human being. We care about the individual. And so with that, we do try to have her and or him, because, you know, we're not exclusive in our services to anyone. We want to love on everybody that comes through the door. We do try to capitalize on people's strengths, and we help process whatever it is that they have weaknesses in. But with regards to what Jalion does, being the director of the programs, because she is artistic, she provides, she oversees the holistic services such as the art therapy. She does paint therapy. We have massage therapy. Of course, we have mental health counseling. So we do try to incorporate the entire individual, mind, body, and spirit, as we are wanting to provide services, integrated services for each individual that we support.
That's excellent. And so we're coming towards the end of the interview, but I read a little bit about brain trust. Can you tell our audience what is brain trust?
Yes, the Brain Trust program is we're wanting to find funding such that we can, because there is such a tremendous disparity within women of color in the South, and so there are 9 states in the Southern United States that have disproportionate rates of HIV infection as it pertains to women of color, specifically African American women. And so we're trying to raise funds such that we can create a brain trust of that joins the 9 states. And we want to work with some of the HBCUs in some of those 9 states, where we can conduct research, and we can find out where the disparities actually lie, how to address those disparities, But one of the differences in the brain trust that we're proposing and the other brain trusts that are out there that, you know, obviously because we have such a tremendous gap in service delivery and in funding and resource delivery, the difference is ours is going to be peer-based, peer-led, and peer-directed. So that is going to be the difference in the current brain trust that we are proposing. And so right now, that whole process is in proposal format, and we're looking for funding to be able to link those 9 states, again, that are disproportionately impacted by HIV in the South.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's an excellent cause. And have you ever tried GoFundMe? Or there's a couple of them online. I've heard that some people have been really, really successful at reaching their goals, you know, and
in the,
getting donations
the GoFundMe,
online.
Yeah. Yeah. We have GoFundMe accounts. We've got you know, feelers out to like-minded individuals, like-minded groups. We've talked to, you know, some people on the federal level, you know, explaining our proposal and, you know, really and working with some other community-based organizations that are not housed in the South, a couple community-based organizations that are in the Washington, D.C. area have been extremely supportive and working with us on helping to capture resources and move that agenda forward. You know, because again, when we look at the disparities that are occurring in the South with regards to HIV, then you look at the intimate partner violence and you look at the other things that surround incest, rape, molestation, and then couple that with HIV, then couple that with poor economic disadvantagements and unemployment, you know, and lack of health insurance. You know, and it goes on and on and on and on.
I think you should look into California because California, the governor just signed a bill, which I oppose, saying that if you're raped and you contract HIV, too bad for you, it's not a crime.
Oh my goodness,
so
really?
So you might want to check that out, yes. And so I'm really glad you're addressing the HIV issue because it's really on the back burner. Nobody talks about it anymore. It's kind of like
no, it's
don't
not.
Want to
it's
hear
not
about
that
it,
fluff.
You know?
No, it's not that fluff disease anymore. It's you're right. It's in the back burner. It's out of sight, out of mind. And you know what happens when things start being out of sight, out of mind?
Get laws like Governor Brown's with you know, it's not a crime to intentionally knowing that you have HIV, not to inform that person. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
That's really scary, you know. And
it
so,
is.
Yes. And so now that we've come to the end of our interview, which has been very enlightening and empowering, I'm sure, for the audience and for myself as well. And why don't you tell us where they can find your books and how they can find your web pages?
Well, thank you so much for having me come on and talk about the book. It is very, very important, and I appreciate an opportunity to be able to share. And your listening audience can go to Catherine, that's CatherineWhatterley. CatherineWhattMorley.com, CatherineWhattMorley.com. There they can communicate with myself and Jalion. Also, they can get autographed copies of the book. They just put in a request, and my daughter and I will sign and send. And, of course, they can Google the book on Amazon. It is on Amazon, and we've got some reviews on Amazon. So all they've got to do is Google either my name or Jalion Welsh Cole, J-A-L-Y-O-N. That's that lion part, the L-Y-O-N. Jalion Welsh, W-E-L-S-H hyphen C-O-L-E, Jalion Welsh Cole. And both of us are on the CatherineWhattMorley.com website. and the book is on Amazon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Catherine. And
well,
I want you to keep up the good work and come back and tell us, you know, about your next book. I'm sure you have a next book, right?
Well, this one was number 4, so I'm going to deal with this one for a little while, and then we're going to get working on number 5.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you so very much for having me on.
You know, I'd also like to hear about your progress with the HIV, too, and with your organization, because it's so important today because, as you know, it's a serious problem today with all the sex trafficking, and it's not decreasing, it's increasing. So, and now they're, you know, we have all these minor children that nobody really knows what to do about. So thank you so much. Keep up the good work, and God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Catherine, Catherine has left the building, and I want you to go to Amazon.com and check out her book and buy it because and share it with anybody you think may need to read this particular book. I'm Product of Rape, a Memoir, and Catherine Wyatt Morley is CatherineWyatt, M like Morley, Morley. So check it out. And we're going to now go into the world of politics just for a little bit here. But first, let's take a break, and I will be back in just a moment on Colombo Chronicles Live Worldwide.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Colombo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home. Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
That's right. You do not want to have to do that, so keep listening to Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday. And it's live at 12 noon to 1 p.m. on the West Coast here in the good old USA. We have some political news here. Breaking, President Trump has signed an executive order that keeps families at the borders together. So I don't know how they're going to resolve all of these tens of thousands of families who are coming to the border. Are they going to detain them and take them back to their country? Are they going to put them on entitlement programs? Because we already probably have about 30 million undocumented, illegal, or non-citizens who have been migrated into this country for decades, and they're draining, unfortunately, our entitlement programs, and they're taking from Medicare and Social Security, and they're trying to call Social Security a entitlement program, a benefit, when it is a government retirement plan that they promised that they would keep in return to the hardworking Americans who had no choice but to allow them to take their money and place it in what they thought would be a trust account for their retirement. So that is called thieves. That is called illegal, unconstitutional, unlawful, and it's called stealing from the American people. That's what it's called, manipulation and tricking the American people, and it would be no different than a Ponzi scheme. So this is a really important issue for Americans today. How are we going to feed our own children when we only earn so much money, and this is increasing the cost of the prison system, believe it or not. I just read an article today that the private prisons are being used now to house the non-citizens, the foreign invaders, the illegals, whatever name you want to give them, who are entering our country and getting on entitlement programs or committing crimes and then ending up in jail, in prison. And it is now in the state of California $75,000 to house one criminal, one prisoner in jail for 1 year per prisoner, $75,000 to the taxpayers. Now, the average American family probably earns $40,000 or $50,000 a year because the cost of living hasn't increased all that much. And, of course, we have a majority of seniors in this country, baby boomers, elderly, who may or may not be on Social Security. So they have to pay into Medicare, too. They don't get a free ride. And so the American citizens who worked all their lives are not getting a free ride, even as seniors. And so we have to wonder, why are they harboring, protecting, and funding people who are non-citizens and allowing our borders to remain open, knowing that they're unidentified, they're not properly vetted, they are not health care checked for diseases that could cause an epidemic, which happened, a spread of a rare hepatitis disease spread over in San Diego County, which they keep under wraps and don't really talk about. And so how many other diseases are being spread that they don't talk about in mainstream media? And so you have to get your information from alternative news such as Colombo Chronicles in order to think about these issues, Google them online, read about them, research, call your representatives and tell them what you think and why you think that an agenda should or should not be implemented and why you think the borders need to be secured and why we should not allow the foreign enemy invasion or the foreign friendly invasion into the USA, whichever it may be, because it's no longer illegal immigration. This is a free-for-all, and we have foreign nations from all over the country sending their poor, uneducated people into our country on the backs of the American taxpayers. The public school system is going down the tubes. They're inserting foreign ideologies, communist core, all these crazy liberal agendas, dumbing down the kids. The inner cities need their schools improved. They need their communities improved. They need to put in programs where the youth won't be shooting each other, but will be learning skills and doing apprenticeships and encouraged to go to school and graduate. These are the things that we need for America's children. And there are millions, at least 15 million American children who go to bed hungry every day, every night, country, or go to school without breakfast. Who cares? Not the Congress, apparently. So on that note, I have to say arrivederci. Ciao, ciao. And talk to you again on Wednesday when we will have another dynamic guest talking about sociopaths and psychopaths in government. And he is a very intriguing guest from Canada, and he's an author, and his name is Stefan Verstappen. And you will thoroughly learn, be enlightened, and empowered with this wonderful information. So until we talk again, remember, you are never alone when you listen to Colombo Chronicles. So, until we talk again, this is the Rose saying, God bless you, God bless America, and May God keep his hand on the United States.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.